Welcome to the Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour. I'm Tammy Van Lu, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. So Congresswoman Eddie Bernice Johnson will be joining me to talk about her attempts to urge Secretary of State Colin Powell to officially request United Nations observers for this fall's presidential elections. We'll also be joined with Ted Lewis from Fair Elections Campaign at Global Exchange to talk about their attempts to bring in international observers to try to address the huge disenfranchisement that played back in the elections of 2000. At the middle of the hour, we'll be taking a look at Bush and Kerry on immigration and the state of the immigrant rights movement with Arnaldo Garcia, the Senior Program Associate from the National Network for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. We'll close up the hour with information on the upcoming town hall meeting to address the recent waves of immigrant sweeps and attacks. We'll be right back.
Things will work out. They do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it. Just you and me.
Welcome back. This is Tammy Bang Lu. So Congresswoman Johnson is in session right now, and so she'll be joining us in about 10 minutes. So we're going to move ahead with Ted Lewis, who is the director of the Fair Elections Initiative from Global Exchange. Welcome, Ted.
Hello?
Hello, Ted. Are
yes.
you on?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
So we're delayed for about another 10 minutes with Congresswoman Johnson. So we thought we'd start with your own attempts. Tell us a little bit about Fair Elections and what you guys are attempting to do in November.
Sure, happy to. Fair Elections Project is the continuation of something that's been going on for years. When Americans have heard about elections in foreign countries over recent years, we've often heard about what international election observers were doing there in places like South America and Eastern Europe, especially where areas were transitioning from military dictatorships or from communist rule. Election observation had become almost a profession in certain circles. The United States government has put millions of dollars into these efforts. And some non-governmental independent observation efforts have also been underway. We've been part of that in many countries over the last 10 years, and now in this situation of the American elections in 2004, which exists under the cloud of the constitutional crisis that was provoked by the dispute in Florida in the year 2000, as everyone knows, resolved by the Supreme Court, we want to make sure this year that both nationally and internationally, all eyes are focused on the United States electoral process to make sure that every vote is counted and that at the end of the day, everyone is convinced that this was a fair, clean, and transparent election and that the results are ones that people can believe in.
And just to remind folks that in Florida during the 2000 elections, African Americans were 10 times more likely than white voters to have their ballots rejected. And in Gladstone County, the only county in Florida with a black majority, approximately 1 in 8 voters were disenfranchised. So let's move on. You're saying this is only international, independent international observers that you're bringing in.
Well, this is one dimension of a voter protection effort that's underway by many organizations across the United States, both partisan and nonpartisan. This is very much a nonpartisan, international, and non-governmental effort. And in that respect, yes, what we're doing is going around the world to invite people from what are functioning democratic countries and people who've had deep experience in administering elections, in struggling for democracy in their own countries, in working to make democracy work better around the world. And at this point, it's very clear that many of the countries that are practicing democracy around the world have made innovations that we feel people in the United States would at least want to discuss. So this is an effort to open up the discussion about how we can make our democracy better and how, once again, we can make sure that every vote gets counted this November.
So what are you guys doing?
Well, we are going to focus on a a range of issues and ask the international observers to help us to examine the questions of enfranchisement and disenfranchisement of voters. The points that you were just bringing up about the vote in Florida are but one indication of the how voters are disenfranchised from our system. In our federal constitution, there is actually no right to vote, and therefore people's right to vote is differential according to state law. So that, for example, in the states of Maine and Vermont, someone who is locked up on a life term for a felony conviction can apply for an absentee ballot and vote from their jail cell in local elections. They're counted as just one more human being in their communities. In other jurisdictions in the United States, there are seven states, Florida included, where if a person commits a felony, they are barred from voting for the rest of their life. So this affects different communities disproportionately because of the way that our justice system deals with different populations in this country. An African-American man is seven times more likely to be disenfranchised under felony disenfranchisement than a person in an average member of the American population. There's something wrong with that. And so those are some of the issues that affect individuals in this process. There's also systemic concerns, and these are the kind of things that international observers are well equipped, and their experience really serves them to look at the questions of how voter lists are maintained or improperly maintained, how purges are carried out when there's either a what's happened in Florida so publicly lately, a purge of felons from the list, to make sure that that is actually done in a way that reflects only the people who are on the list. It's been done in a very sloppy fashion in the past, disenfranchising large numbers of people. There are also questions around the renewal of voter lists in a place like St. Louis, Missouri. The sending out of postcards under the motor voter law, postcards are sent around in communities. If you don't respond to the postcard within a certain amount of time, your name is put on the inactive list. The faulty maintenance of that system in St. Louis, Missouri, resulted in nearly a sixth of the population being summarily removed from the voter list. So these kind of problems abound in the United States. Our democracy has long and deep roots, but it also has issues that need to be dealt with, and that is why communities around the United States will be able to invite in international observers this year.
And you're setting up this process in two stages. Can you talk a little bit more about what those stages are? And then also in your own attempts to get international observers, have you had any luck?
Yeah. Well, we indeed are going to undertake this observation in two stages. The first stage is pre-electoral, and that will happen during the month of September. The observers will be invited to come into the country and be briefed all in one location in Washington, D.C., and then will spread out to a number of states. The reason we're asking them to come prior to the election and not only on election day is because our experience doing international observation in many countries is that the dynamics of election day, the speed at which things are happening simultaneously in so many places, makes the kind of investigation that international people can do somewhat irrelevant on the election day, because it gets buried under a cloud of people seeking to know who won and that sort of thing. If you come earlier, you can look into issues, you can make suggestions, you can actually be part of a process of making sure that things work, not just being there to report on what went wrong. So that's why we're asking people to come in September. And the observers in September will travel to five different states. As of the moment, the states that they are slated to go to are Missouri, Arizona, Ohio, Florida, and those are the sites we're going to.
And they're major battleground states.
Beg your pardon?
I said they're major battleground states.
No major battleground states?
I said, and there are major battleground states.
Several of them are, yes.
Arizona, California, Florida.
Those are all places where there are elements of what we especially want to look at. With the limited number of observers that we're going to have, we can't go to every state in the country. So we're going to states where, for example, in Georgia, there are it is a state that has chosen to go 100% electronic in its voting systems. It and Maryland are two states that have completed the installation of electronic voting. And so it's a place where the question of can that kind of voting be done fairly and in a way that everyone can feel confident about the results, that's an example. There are a lot of people who are very concerned about that issue. Georgia is a place where we can really test the waters on that in a state that's gone 100% electronic. Similarly, in Arizona, we're looking at questions of a state that has consciously chosen to adopt a clean money election policy. It's one of only two states in the country that's done it. And we think that at the moment is an example of how our democracy could evolve toward a more equitable process, one where people have more ability to get involved in politics, that you don't have to be a member of a wealthy political party in order to have your ideas resonate in our system. So we think that what's going on in Arizona is very interesting and would like our observers to be able to take a look at that and compare also the experiences that they've had in their own countries in regards to regulating wealth in electoral processes.
And Global Exchange has had several programs in relationship to other countries to ensure that people's democratic rights to elections won't be. I mean, recently in the Strategy Center, we sent a couple of our organizers down to El Salvador to ensure that elections could happen fairly. There were a lot of attempts by our own congresspeople to try to influence the vote in swinging against the FMLN. Can you talk about that a little bit?
In terms of the history of international election observation, well, you know, what you see when the United States decides to observe an election is that there are a number of institutions in the U.S. that will swing into action. A couple of those are directly funded by the government, and that would be the International Republican Institute and the National Democratic Institute. They both get money from the State Department. There's also the Carter Center, which stands more independent from the government, certainly, but, you know, is tied to a former president of the United States. So these organizations are frequently involved, as is the United States Embassy, in election observations. Many of the observations that Global Exchange has participated in this hemisphere, we have seen our role as being one group that is very explicitly non-governmental, that we don't take money from and we don't work at the behest of any government organization. That's very important to us in terms of being another voice that has a distinct point of view, that's not that doesn't come and really try to represent the interests of the United States per se. We are there in that country to represent and to work with domestic organizations that are trying to build the best democracy they possibly can in that country. And I think that the Carter Center has done an admirable job in many of the cases where they have worked in doing exactly the same thing. So those are the kind of electoral processes I'm sure that you've been involved in. And in many cases, not necessarily from those people participating in the election observation, but on the political level, there certainly has been enormous pressure exerted by people in the official U.S. power structure. There's no question about that. And we really see election observation as being something that counterbalances that in the sense of really saying that this is a people's diplomacy, making sure that people who believe in democracy can practice it around the world, not waiting for the governments to do that for us.
Well, we're still waiting for Congresswoman Johnson.
She's late.
Yeah, they're actually in the midst of a voting process. But just to state that, you know, in her press release, she stated that it's imperative that there be some type of independent monitoring for this fall's election, that the United Nations provides this assistance for other members. Why not the United States? We're not above the law, nor are we above asking for assistance. This is quoting her words. What kind of response have you gotten in terms of your own efforts by folks? I mean, the Republican hardliners are weighing in, calling this a lie, and then that there's been not one person. I think the New York Post, when they heard, saw the release, the press release stated that there had been not one vote denied, that they can't prove it, and that this is basically weighing in that this is a sham to the union, and you can just imagine where they're going with that. In terms of your own efforts, have you reached any bricks or barriers from any of the Republican parties?
Well, no. The fact is we're not calling for a governmental entity like the United Nations to be involved. That's not what we are working on. I think that the members of Congress have made a very strong statement by 161 members of the House of Representatives voting to request that kind of international scrutiny. But, you know, it, at the end of the day, the United Nations is a governmental organization in that it's composed entirely of different governments and their representatives. So this is the effort that we're undertaking is completely non-governmental, and therefore is not coming in an official capacity. And I think in that regard, people are have thus far been very willing to, you know, just hear that that's citizen-to-citizen assistance to open up dialogue around this whole question of democracy. We're really looking to inhabit that space in the American spectrum that's been abandoned to such a great extent of really saying, you know, what is finally going to allow us to resolve our problems is a kind of fairness and civility and a way to talk about the real issues of the day, because as long as we're in the kind of polarized situation that we're in right now, we're not going to be able to resolve the questions of war and peace, the questions of a sustainable environment, the questions of truly representing human rights around the world, and certainly not the kind of abuses that we've seen. These sort of questions now fall into a polarized America. We need, you know, to really have people come together around just the simple issue of everyone's vote ought to count. We got to make sure that we respect our democracy. And the great thing about the people who are coming from around the world, and you asked earlier, you know, have we had success? We've had tremendous success as we reach out to people across the globe who are concerned about the United States, are concerned about the country that has, you know, for all its flaws, also raised the torch of democracy around the world on innumerable occasions and has been, you know, hence has provided an example that a lot of people have aspired to, written constitutions that are based on the model that was developed here. So in that regard, you know, these people are coming who have often suffered at the hand of military dictatorships, some of which, in fact, have been supported by the United States. Nevertheless, they believe in the kind of democracy and the democratic spirit and recognizing that at any time of history, democracy is only so strong. There's always going to be enemies of democracy in the world, and that we need to work together constantly to renew the bonds of a society that are really there when you have democratic practice.
Well, I mean, obviously, the Voices from the Frontline segment of this show, which we strongly believe that the United States doesn't function as a democracy. If you have as many people disenfranchised in Florida as you had in 2000, and it continues to this day, that the very essence of the forming of the United States was based on a history of human rights and civil rights violations that follow on to this day. I mean, in the later segment, we're going to be moving on to the issue of immigrant rights, and there again, we'll see the same topic come up.
Yeah, well, I couldn't agree more that you know, it is our responsibility as people in the United States to question why it is that so many people, for example, don't vote, why so many people who want to vote are in one way or another denied that right, why there isn't something in the Constitution that says all citizens of the country have the constitutional right to vote. That's you know, puts us in the dramatic minority among democratic countries around the world. Most democratic countries do have that as a you know, simple right in the Constitution. You're a citizen, you have the right to vote. Not so here, and that does reflect that over the years, the course of American democratic practice has been to draw in only through struggle. struggle, but to eventually draw in more and more people. But we haven't reached the level that, you know, everybody truly participates. And the fact that even in presidential elections, nearly 50% of the electorate, you know, vote with their feet or just don't vote, says that there's a real lack of confidence in our institutions. So that's why we're, you know, really taking this kind of unprecedented effort to reach out as non-governmental, non-partisan, international actors in this to bring in other voices and really have this discussion about American democracy that we need to have so badly.
Thank you so much, Ted. We're going to go on to a short break and move on to our next segment.
All right. Thanks.